for our nonfiction pick, we're going to look at the skin nerd
philosophy. We're going to look at the skin nerd philosophy. Hi, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Sarah. And welcome to
Good Luck with the Book, the podcast that celebrates all things books with plenty of news, stories, and chats. Sarah, on to episode 4. We got her over halfway. Well, we're just at halfway, so
yeah.
of the season. There's a few things that came in from last time, which I thought were, one was, I was in Galway with John for our anniversary and bumped into somebody who listens to the podcast in the publishing industry. And they were like, Jesus, Jamie, you swear. I was like, yes, but they don't even ever win. They'd only ever seen me in kind of a professional capacity. And I obviously just don't swear if I was meeting people, you know, as
in work,
which is a good thing. But like, Jesus, the mouth on me. So I actually went back to the episode 3 afterwards, which was going out on the Sunday. And I heard this on the Saturday and literally cut out some of the swears. So I was like,
did you?
I did, yeah. Because
there's a I swear a lot.
No. I just get giddy and I kind of lose my
throat
of myself.
Rein it in, Jamie, for fuck's sake.
Rein it in, yes. Oh my God. Beep. Another thing people asked, is there any way that Sarah and I, when we say good luck with the book, could we get it in sync? And I just wanted to clarify with people, when we're face to face, we can actually do that. But through a Zoom call, there's a delay of about, well, we haven't figured out the delay because that's why we can't get the timing right. So that's why I was like, good luck with the book. So apologies to anyone who's listening and kind of going like, what is wrong with you? It's like one sentence that you can't say in time, but it's actually a computer audio technical thing. But when we're back in Le Caravan, we'll make sure to
get news about the caravan.
Oh no, you're selling it.
Oh God. I don't think I could
sell the wind took it away.
No, we put it back into storage. Like I couldn't keep it in the driveway.
Oh yeah.
After Christmas, my neighbours would go mad.
Like realistically, it's not. We're not going to get in there before season 2.
We have to do it anyway until
look at us, season 2. The other thing I was going to flag as well is we had about 4 or 5 people have written reviews of the podcast on Apple. I don't think you can do it on
Spotify. Or some of the other kind of podcasts.
Yeah, I don't think you can on Spotify, but it really makes a massive difference. I didn't actually realise how much like the reviews suddenly you see it kind of going out further. So if you are listening and you do like it, please, even if you just click the 5 stars, that's great. But if you write a review, we will light a candle for you at Christmas. I don't know. I don't think what we can give for like
send out positive vibes.
Yes, no. Yeah, your place will be assured in heaven. I was gonna ask, there's a few things I watched during the week. Have you seen Emily in Paris?
That no, but I've heard really good. Well, everyone is saying it's a great kind of antidote to everything that's gone down at the moment. It's very positive. You don't love it?
I loved and hated it at the same time. I kind of finished it and was quite happy. Almost going to look forward to the next episode because the main character, I can't even remember what her name is now, but I'll tell you.
Emily, isn't that Emily?
Oh, sure, Emily, yes. Emily. But she is, for me, a cross between Carrie Bradshaw and Cher Horowitz from like Clueless. I thought she was somewhere in the middle. And I think some of the outfits they even have her in are very kind of Cher from Clueless. But
I love Cher's wardrobe, so that's good.
Yes, which is great. That kind of like yellow tartan outfit and everything. Amazing. But firstly, she is insufferable. She's just really smug and brings a sort of superiority compared to, you know, all these French people who are, I'm guessing the Parisians aren't particularly happy about how they're being perceived. But she often seems to know better than her bosses. And, you know, she's kind of a young person who got an opportunity to come to Paris. And she seems to, you know, always win out against people who are in their careers for 2 decades. So I found that, like, just that smugness of her just really, like, ugh. Yeah, it just kind of put me off. But at the same time, it's a bit of crack. Like, I mean, on the one hand, I'm like going, God, you're painful. And at the same time, you know, somehow or another, I still did watch all the series over about two or three evenings. So there you go. And the other thing I've been watching is American Murder, the documentary on Netflix. Actually, it was amazing because it was kind of a...
Yeah. And do you know what was good about it? Because all of those things on Netflix, they make way too long. That would normally have been like a 10 episode thing. Instead, it was like an hour and a half feature film. And it was perfect.
I actually can't fathom how he...
It's just awful.
Yeah. But the other thing now that's over and we're now watching Unsolved Mysteries is back on. Did you watch Unsolved Mysteries like in the 90s?
No.
Oh, okay, oh God. I don't know how I watched it in the 90s because I would have been like a child. And I'm going, how was I watching this terrifying TV show? Because it had that music, which to this day, when it comes on, do you know the music?
No. I didn't even know it was a thing in the 90s.
Oh, It's huge, Sarah.
No.
No, because you were probably good parents who protected you from watching such horror. Like, I'd be going to bed at night, like, do you know the way you turn off the light in the hallway? And I'd leg it to the bedroom because I'd be like, the darkness would freak me out. Like, it just, and I'll tell you now, there was this one episode which haunted, well, actually, my sister Bev in particular haunted her. It was about this, I think he's attacked a few women. It was, you know, he was on the run, this guy, and his name was Wadada. Anyway, like, it just sounds like a Wiccan name or something. But what he had a withered hand, and it was something about the withered hand that just seemed to trigger us children. Anyway, so, but my parents had, oh, do you know the way, fucking hell, the 90s, like, ornaments, like, objets around the house everywhere, like, you know, porcelain and everything. I don't know, our generation seems to be just anti that in every way, but my parents had, like, Waterford crystal, porcelain, the whole, like, cupboards of shite to clean. It just, excuse my language. But one thing we had was this little carved wooden hand.
Oh, no.
And I used to get the little hand and I just put it around the door and stuff like that, in the bedroom and stuff like that. Like, I'm just like, Wadada. Like, we are horrible. But anyway, that's so, and would you believe when the new Unsolved Mysteries came out, I was going, did that actually happen? Or is that just one of those kind of childhood things? And I went on YouTube and Googled Wadada Unsolved Mysteries and it was a thing. He's there. Like, anyway, moving on. Could we be more off the topic of books? So, Sarah, getting back to books, are you reading anything at the moment? Any kids' books you want to flag?
It's a Julie Donaldson book, and Lydia Monks is the illustrator. It's called What the Ladybird Heard, and I mean, they are obsessed with it. Oh, you just look around and there's some, like, one of them, Pearl and Nancy, standing behind with a little book in their hand. But it came with them, Davey from Panmack got it for me, and it came with a little ladybird plush. And they call the ladybird, well, me and Dara call the ladybird Davy.
Oh.
It's such a really cute story. It's just about, those are animal noises and stuff in it. So that's why they love it, I think. And the illustrations are gorgeous.
Because she does one as well, which I love, The Snail and the Whale, which is a really cute story as well.
Yeah.
I know I've read that with my nephews. And of course, The Gruffalo as well. Sure, everyone would know.
Yeah, everyone's mad for Gruffalo. Yeah.
Gruffalo. So one of the books that came this week was from HarperCollins, actually. It's A Page from My Life, a selection of stories from Ray Darcy Show listeners. And it's 150 stories that have been selected, I think out of thousands, kind of in the vibe of Sunday Miscellany. Like, you'd read a page or two. And you know what? If you were during lockdown, if you had this, I think, on the breakfast table and just read a couple of them every day, it'd be a nice kind of start to the day. It's kind of, they're kind of, as I said, very Sunday miscellany. So they're kind of warm and nice to listen to. And the cause, have to flag Laura Lynn Foundation, because obviously it's the Children's Hospice and they do incredible work. Like, so, so good. So
it's a nice one to support.
It's a really nice one to support for Christmas. And actually, it's a lovely little book, like a story a day kind of a thing, you know, just dipping in and out.
So, Jamie, what's our fiction pick this week?
Our fiction pick this week is Love by the Booker Prize winning Roddy Doyle.
And our non-fiction book is from Ireland's skin expert Jennifer Rock, aka The Skin Nerd, and it's called The Skin Nerd Philosophy.
And our debut is A Ghost in the Throat by Dhiren Nagrifa, which is actually up for 2 Irish Book Awards.
Let's get cracking!
Let's get cracking! So our fiction title this week is Love by the Booker Prize winning Roddy Doyle. This is a very Roddy book, I thought. It's two men. I mean, everyone has probably read the Two Pints series. So it's like kind of two men in a bar, kind of late middle age. You have Davy and Joe. Joe has left his wife Trish, of they've been married for, I think, 20 odd years, for a woman called Jessica. And then you've Davy, who has been with Faye for decades, but actually he has come back to Dublin because he's been living in the UK for some time to care for his kind of very sick father. It's just them chatting in a series of bars over the course of one night. And I don't know, how did you find the book, Sarah?
I actually really enjoyed it. I think Roddy Doyle does dialogue really well. My favourite parts are probably the bits that when they went back to when they were, had just first got jobs and they went to that bar, George's. And it's where Joe first set eyes on Jessica.
Yes.
And it just made me think back, you know, back when you were younger and you could go for a drink on a Saturday afternoon or something and just have chats with your friends. Life was just way easier, I think. And it just brought me back to that kind of time.
I think for me, if I'm honest, like, I could, like, the book was, it's Roddy Doyle, it's great writing. He knows how to write. He knows how to write dialogue. The characters are well formed. But at times I just wanted to slap Joe so badly. I really found him frustrating. And I don't know. And I've thought about it afterwards and thought, why did I find Joe just drove me mad? And I think it's just, he has had a life where he's had one major relationship and maybe hasn't had the experience I have, which is a single gay man in his 20s. And I have experienced infatuation repeatedly, weekly through my 20s. And do you know what I mean? I really, you go out in a night, you'd like, you'd see someone, you'd be kind of like dazzled by them or whatever. This has happened to me a lot over the years. Like, I'm an idiot. But the point of the matter is that I just, I'm so, as a 35-year-old now, in a what feels like a grown-up relationship, I find that infatuation so dangerous and so fickle and so unreliable. And for somebody to be like, because he's in love with the idea of her, it's so stupid. Like a man in his late 50s, I think he's nearly touching 60. To give it all up. But I kind of was trying to go, why would he do this? And I'm kind of going, well, maybe if he hadn't had my experiences and actually experienced infatuation once like that, and it would be that overwhelming. Because when I did have infatuation, let's say for the first or second time, it did feel like everything.
Yeah.
But you just, as a few, you know, and I found as well with infatuation, the less likely it is to work out, the more intense the infatuation gets. So it's kind of this desire. And I think there's even a quote further later in the book where he talks about he's trying to fix her. Like, Jesus Christ, there's fewer red flags in China. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's so many. I just could shake him so many times in the book. But I kind of see at the same time that someone, I don't know for you, if you kind of, because you've been in a relationship for many, many years, but I think he was very quick to negate 25 years with his wife. I thought he was very quick to... And
throw it all away.
Yeah. And these, and what this line, and you know what, as a child who comes from separated parents from early childhood, I think this book was quite triggering for me, because he says at times, he says in one point, I die for my kids. And I'm like, but you can't even stay with your wife who is incredibly good and loving, and you were still having a sexual relationship till the day you broke up. Like,
that's what I
can't. Work on it. Like, work on your relationship.
He didn't, it wasn't like they were having problems. He was happy. That's what, you know what I mean? Before. And then he's just seen up this woman again. And suddenly nothing, none of that matters.
I found Joe really triggering, as my therapist would say.
So did his friend. His friend was infuriated by him.
But I think the thesis of the book that I came away after said, what is this book about? And it's called Love. And I think it should be Love, question mark. And the reason being is, you have the one hand, you have a guy who is experiencing intense love for Jessica, Joe, this in love feeling, this infatuation. And on the other hand, you have Davey or David, who has no real deep love for his father. Like, there's no mass relationship there, but he's doing a loving thing by caring for him in his dying years. So for me, I came away from the book and I was like, is love a feeling or is love an action? And I think over the years, my belief on it is it really is action. It's not feeling, because you can feel loving and still like leave your kids and your wife. Do you know what I mean? You can do a very unloving thing while experiencing in-loveness.
Yeah.
Whereas actually, so for me, action would always be the thing that I would personally feel is what ultimately matters. I don't know. Did you read it that way or?
Yeah. I also thought, was it referring to the love between the two men? They'd been friends for so long, hadn't seen each other for years. But then when they come back at this point, you knew they'd loved each other in the past, but I don't know if they probably still love each other, but they don't like each other anymore. I don't think they like each other anymore. But there's something that still brings them together. And then the relationship between him and his father when his mother died when he was young, and he just lives with his dad in the house, and they barely speak to each other. But then his dad will just do something that's extremely loving. I think it was Davey, actually, wasn't it?
Davey, yeah.
When, like that really struck me.
It's all these different aspects of love. The title is great. I think the title really kind of nails it. There's a few little funny things, this is not seriously on the book, but I thought I'd just, little question I'd ask you. Do you know the passwords to Dara's phone? Like, she talks about checking each other's phones. Trish checking Joe's phone.
Yeah, checks his phone.
Yeah.
I do know the passwords to Dara's phone, but I wouldn't check it.
Like, I've never checked a boyfriend's phone ever. Like, ever. And for me, the attitude is, I'll trust you till you give me a reason not to trust you. So for me, I've never felt in that situation where I'm like...
Yeah, and that's why I wondered, like, she was very quick to check it. Like, what? He thinks that he hasn't done anything before. I think he had a fling at a work Christmas party or something, but he hadn't done anything. But he must have been giving out some kind of vibe that she projects on. I don't know.
And the other thing was, I think it's a lovely description by Roddy Doyle, where he talks about the thrill of new love. And this is something which is lovely, is that feeling of the electricity of holding someone's hand who you're really in that early stages of being in love. And it brought me back to actually my first kiss, well, my first gay kiss, actually, because to be honest with you, I kissed a few girls from my teenage years. And do you know what? It was a bit like starting an engine. That was a cold morning. It just wasn't kind of... There was no spark. Do you know what I mean? Like, do you know what I mean? You could have had the choke on it in the car and it was not going to start. But I do remember the first time I had a kiss, actually. It was actually in the Bodega in Cork. I think I was probably late teens, like 1920. And I remember at that point instantly knowing from that, not from infatuation, but I suppose just instantly going, oh, I'm gay.
Yeah.
Like, there was actually a guy, and I'm not going to mention him, and we call him Redacted. He's an awful human being and who I was infatuated with in my early 20s. And do you know what? He gave me such the runaround because I wasn't into him for a long time. And well, not that I wasn't into him, I was actually quite into him, but he'd actually dated a friend of mine not too long before that. And so I...
No-go area.
And I actually, for a long time, it was a total no-go area. But then the friend actually started dating somebody else and they were going out for about a year. But in that time, I think the guy tried it on with me about 3 times on nights out. And I was like, no, friend over friend. But then anyway, the original friend was dating another guy for a long period of time and it just wasn't such an issue. So finally we hooked up and because I'd fancied him all that time and I just stopped myself from doing anything. And I remember we hooked up and great night. And I woke up the next day and I was like, Joe, I was head over heels. And he wasn't interested. He'd obviously got what he wanted. He got what he wanted. Either that or I was terrible in bed. But I refused to believe the second. He was just a horrible person.
You weren't compatible, Jamie.
Oh, no. Well, it was bad for me. And randomly enough, then years later, I went out to Australia and randomly bumped into him out in Australia.
No way.
And I could still feel him playing this little game the whole time, kind of enjoying. Do you know when someone doesn't want a friend, they want a fan?
Yeah.
I could feel he wanted a fan and he wanted to know that I desired him. And as long as he felt that, he was getting his kick and I was just kind of tortured through it. So maybe that's one of the reasons when I read this, I'm like, infatuation does not lead to happiness. Like, it might feel that way, but it is a dangerous, dangerous road. It's funny because there's a quote and it reminds me, oh no, this is me showing off. But Proust, you know, In Search of Lost Time, the French writer, and it talks, one of the characters in it is talking about this woman that he loved. And he said, to think that I've wasted years of my life, that I've longed to die, that I've experienced my greatest love for a woman who didn't appeal to me, who wasn't even my type. And I just thought, that's how dangerous love is. You will fall in love with somebody who was totally wrong for you. And then, as he said, with Joe wanting to fix this woman and also describing her as unhappy, I was like, goodness me, like, this is terrible. But the one thing that has come out of the book for me, which is kind of nice about the chat here, is it really asks questions and you end up having a discussion about kind of love, which I suppose is so fundamental to life. So I think it will lead to a lot of debate, but I definitely take the side of the scorned women, if I'm honest, and the scorned children. So
he's not a nice person.
No.
And I don't think
no.
You're meant to like him, so.
No.
That's okay. And like you say, it just.
And then on the other hand, you've sort of an almost Davy who towards the end ends up almost an angelic creature. You know, he kind of ends up being such an amazing, amazing son. So yeah, love the book. Great writing, but also incredibly frustrating at times. I could have feckin' strangled Joe. Yeah, so thank you, Roddy. Great book. And we try and say good luck with the book together. Okay, 3, 2, 1.
Good luck with the book. Okay, for our nonfiction pick, we're going to look at The Skin Nerd Philosophy by Jennifer Rock. This is actually her second book on skin. I love Jennifer Rock. I first heard about her, like, it was 3 or 4 years ago, and she was on morning radio, I remember, with Alison Curtis. And she was just talking about skin. And I'd never really heard anyone talk about skin the way she does. She kind of breaks it down and makes it less complicated than it needs to be. And ever since then, I've just kind of followed her on social media.
Do you know what I liked in the kind of her philosophy at the start was, it was a balance in the middle. She was like, do a bit, but accept the fact that, you know, it is skin. It's an organic thing. It's going to have bad days. We all have bad days. So I kind of like that opening philosophy. I mean, I was delighted to do this book because I have just been big into skin since quite young, actually. I remember when I was probably about 19 or 20 reading a book called The Perry Coney Diet, which was what Kim Cattrall was on at the time, which was, it was the skin diet. And
really?
Yeah, I remember at the time. And you had to eat salmon twice. You weren't allowed carbs. You had to eat kind of salmon twice a day and basically green veg and fish. And that was essentially your diet. Now, I do that all week. And then Friday evening, I go out and I have those Red Bull and vodkas that we talked about last week. So it was a bit of a clash. But the one thing I suppose that I definitely took away from that was sunscreen. And I would have been religious about wearing sunscreen since I was 19. And I've kind of been wearing it almost daily. I'd say 300 of the 360 days of the year I'd be wearing sunscreen. So, which was kind of good. And I know she talks hugely about the importance of that. I always, if I got spots, it was because I deserved them. Do you know what I mean? Like, as in I'd eaten takeout for a weekend, or, you know, eaten badly, or most likely just had too much alcohol and come home at 5 a.m., you know, and you'd kind of, the skin would be reacting to that. It'd be kind of, you know, so I've always been quite lucky that way. I don't know.
I haven't. Since I was like 12 or 13, I would have had like acne. And so the amount of things that I tried, like, it's crazy. I was on that crazy, I don't know, there's this medication called Roaccutane, which, like, if you're a girl, you have to go and get a pregnancy test every month. Because if you get pregnant, your child will be like...
Not right.
Not right, yeah. Like in the UK, you have to sign a form to say you'd have an abortion. Like, it's really bad for you. You have to get a liver function test. So it like dries up. I think it literally dries up everything in your body. So, but it's drying up your skin, so it gets rid of your spot. Meanwhile, it's also getting rid of everything in your body. But if you had this book, like, she tells you how to look after your skin. I know for some people, these things don't work and you need to have medical intervention. But I was on Roaccutane twice. Like, it worked while I was on it. And then when I came off it, it didn't work. So for the what it puts your body through, I don't think it's worth it. Where when I started using the products that she talks about, like the salicylic acid and glycolics and stuff like that, it's a much better long-term approach to skin. Mm. And I think for this people, just buying this book would actually save you a fortune. The amount of shit that I have in my bathroom shelf. And she goes through all the different products and how they benefit your skin. And you can look at them and see what you think is good and get that instead of spending a fortune on...
Well, there's 3 for 2 in Boots used to get me every time, like 3 for 2 in Boots. You go for one thing and then you'd be like, well, the second thing is going to be half price now because, you know, I'm going to get another thing free with it. So you'd have 3 things instead of one. So I definitely in my early 20s, I used to spend, and considering I was like student money, like the fact that I'd be going to buying Clinique and all this kind of stuff was insane. And actually, it did not make my skin better. And I remember probably about 15, oh yeah, I'd have been about 20. I remember there was a Panorama done in the UK, a BBC Panorama undercover thing on, and it did people using the products, each of these major ranges for 28 days. And I think they did about 12 different ranges, 10 out of the 12 major skin worse.
Really?
They actually said like, increase the signs of aging, increase the fine lines, dried out your skin. Is like literally 10 out of 12. The one that actually came out one of the best was actually the Boots number 7. Randomly.
Boots number 7. That,
yeah, yeah. And that serum became hugely popular because of that.
Huge.
Because of that Panorama documentary, the serum became, but you couldn't buy it. It was like, you couldn't be like a waiting list for it. So I think after that, I really woke up to doing your homework.
Decent
and,
products.
Yeah. And actually decent didn't necessarily mean the most expensive. Now, I found one thing you kind of, sunscreen was one thing that you had to get right because or else you'd give you spots if you didn't get the right kind of
one. What one do you use?
There is one I get from the States, which I'm actually reordering in again. It's the Eucerin Daily Protection Face Lotion SPF 30. Now, this is a physical sunblock, so it's not absorbed by the skin, so it's not so chemically bad for your skin. However, you can only get in the States, which makes me wonder what it is. I always get friends to bring it home when they were traveling. Now, it's $11 in the US. I'm paying €26 here to get it from amazon.co.uk, but whatever, it's fine. But the one thing is there's no oil in it, so it just didn't give me any kind of spots. And in fact, you'd probably need to use a moisturizer with it because it just had no moisturizer in it at all. But at the moment, I'm using a Clarins one, which is really good, which I'll put on Insta.
Yeah.
But like the Clarins one is where I'd spend the money, whereas like some of the things like face washes and stuff like that, I think a lot of that is crap. I think the difference between one that's €6 and one that's 20 is, I don't know, for me, I find them a bit much of a muchness.
Well, it depends on what you need for your skin. Like she talks about that, like if you suffer with spots, you have to get one with the salicylic acid. That's an active ingredient. You need to spend a bit more. I get the image one, and she does one as well, her range skin ingredients. Mm. But they last, you could literally get 6 or 7 months out of the bottle.
Oh, wow.
You don't need that much. Mm.
Because I kind of came away with her thinking, and it was great because she kind of validated actually most of what I've known over the years, and that is always wear sunscreen, really get a serum with a retinoid in it of some sort that will kind of help with any anti-aging.
Yeah, vitamin A.
Vitamin A, and make sure to exfoliate with a chemical exfoliant. So, like,
but a chemical one, that's the important thing, not the one with the little balls that
rip
the skin off you.
My skin can kind of take it. I think maybe male skin can take that better. I find them fine.
And they ruin the environment.
Well, they do. Well, actually, another little plug here. There's a one by Darren Kennedy, which actually is made of clay. So it's actually, it's not plastic. It's Irish clay. So it has a mild exfoliant, kind of physical exfoliant, but it's actually fine for the environment. So I'd recommend that one.
That probably helps with them, like the hair and stuff. Does it like blocked hairs, or what are they called, ingrown hairs?
I think everyone's skin is different. My skin can, you know, I can use the alpha lipoic acid, like this chemical stuff, fine. I can put on a retinoid, fine, no problem. I can put on some, like, I don't really get, I'm really blessed with my skin, but my sister is totally different. I was like raving about like the ordinary and stuff, and she cannot use it. Her skin just goes mad whenever she uses it. So you kind of have to figure out what works for you.
Yeah, I was the same as your sister with the ordinary. I got their retinoid cream and my skin got so red and patchy. So I got the one from the Skin Nerd, and just whatever potency or whatever just worked better for me. And I'd only use it every night instead of morning and night.
Now, she has a little checklist of how you're doing. I'm going to run through them with you and you kind of go, we'll both just answer how we think we're doing. So sleep, how are you on sleep for your skin?
Oh, brutal.
Yeah. Okay. So that's one. She talks about blue light, screen time.
God.
Not good.
No.
Daylight. Sunscreen and stuff. It's kind of the balance, though, I think, as well, to like, they also say you need vitamin D for your skin. So
I know. And it has to be uncovered. Like your skin has to be uncovered and get this, like, let direct sunlight out of for 10 minutes or something. Mm. So
like, I suppose with in the summer and stuff, well, I actually take a vitamin D supplement, if I'm honest.
Yeah, I take vitamin D as well.
Because you recommended it to me years ago and I found it great in the winter to just take it. It gives you a lift. Anxiety, Jesus Christ. Anxiety, pandemic year. I think we're all failing on that one. Water, I'm pretty good for drinking.
Yeah, I'm pretty good at water.
Sugar, good and bad. I have good days and bad days. Diet, I'm actually not too bad. I make good meals for myself. Mixed. And caffeine.
Oh, brutal.
Brutal, and skincare, which I'm okay with.
I have a good skincare routine that I follow religiously.
So basically the fact that I have reasonable skin is a miracle. But like, I have broken capillaries on my nose. I have stretch marks on my lower back from, I think, when I grew, like when I was about 12 or 13, I shut up. I have stretch marks on my lower back. I have the first bits of fine lines around my eyes, and I cannot tan for shit.
Tanning is skin damage.
No, but you know, there's lovely like Latin... Like, especially I'd be going to Sitges on my old gay holidays and you'd see these lovely Spanish guys on the beaches and they have this even glow over their skin. Like, if I tan, it's sectional. You know what I mean? There's a line everywhere. So there's just no point. So I've just given up. I've accepted my paleness. But what I'm saying is, you know...
Shimmer.
Oh, yeah. Do you know what? I can't do that anymore because you sweat. And if you're wearing a white top, that's long gone. I actually don't think John will be able for that. And the other thing John isn't able for is the feckin' spray water in a can. You know, the Evian.
Spritz block.
Which, because I bought the hyaluronic acid, which Jennifer talks about as well. And, you know, she says your skin needs to be wet, like moisturized, and that it needs to be moisture in the atmosphere or else it actually works against your skin. One thing, Jennifer, I was so like vindicated. She says eye creams, very little.
Yeah, very rarely work. I know.
Well, I would say that. I have two of them inside and they're absolute waste of time.
She recommends one if you have very puffy eyes, and it's from an Irish company, actually. So happy to mention it. It's Pestle and Mortar. Oh, you can get them in like the Kilkenny shop, which is another Irish business. Mm. So, but that's really good. But that's more for people with puffy eyes rather than like fine lines or anything.
I think nothing helps your eyes like a night's sleep, honestly.
Or Botox.
Well, I just do that too. I feel a bit like all those famous people are like, I tried it once and it didn't, you know, it wasn't for me. And I'm like, you're still using it, clearly. Like, come
on. Your forehead's not moving.
And the other thing as well, she says about squeezing spots, which she says is okay, but, you know, to be careful and to make sure, because there is that kind of spot that sits under the skin, which...
Oh, so painful.
But you're not going to get it out. It's not going to grow. It's a hormone thing or whatever. And in actual fact, you make it look 10 times worse for the picking. So, but that's a really, like, you have to discipline yourself to not, like, attack your face. But I was glad you said about spots, because I definitely, you can't leave a yellow head. Could you imagine us even having this chat on Zoom, on a Zoom call, and me with a big yellow spot? You'd be like, I can't even review the books. I can't even bear to look at you.
She says as well, like, all your creams you should be putting on from the nipples up. Isn't that mad? Like, I can't afford to do that.
Well, from my point of view, if it's being exposed to the sun, like, you should put your sunscreen on from, like, your neckline, like, from wherever your t-shirt, whatever it is. But
it could be, I put on body lotion up to here. So I think that's covered. But I wouldn't be putting on my vitamin A or my expensive.
I actually find body lotion just gives me spots. So I'm actually, my skin is much happier if I just get a, like, a body wash that has, like, a Dove body wash that doesn't dry out your skin.
Yeah.
The other thing I thought was a really good tip from her, which I don't do, which I think we should, is having two small bins in the bathroom, and one's recycling and one's other, detritus.
Yeah.
Because it happens to me as well, because I'm very conscious of recycling, and I bring the bin down and I see, like, a couple of used toilet rolls in the bin and a bottle of something, and I can just see, like, floss on top of them and, like, damp toilet tissue. And I can't bring myself to put the hand into the bin. And I feel bad about it. I feel really bad. So I thought her tip to put it in, you know, don't ever mix the two together in the first place. Have them separated out.
Yeah.
Like a little mini bin where you do put your bathroom, like even the cardboard boxes that they come in, all that, because that's easily recycled. Yeah. It's every little helps, you know?
I got her a few, because like a package you can get four different things, products from her. And it came in a little box and there was all these little foam little balls. And I was like, for God's sake, when you're, because I, you know, waste packaging. But when you read the thing, you just put the things into the sink and they dissolve.
Amazing.
That was very clever.
Brilliant. Yeah.
Saving on waste. So I think for this book, I think would be a gorgeous gift for somebody if you got them this with like some skincare products as a little kind of hamper thing. Be a gorgeous Christmas gift.
Sure. Who isn't, like, the world we live in, Instagram world, who doesn't want good skin?
With skin now. We've come a long way from Clearasil, Jamie.
Oh my God. Do you remember you used to buy, the other thing we used to get back in the day was the kind of tubs of, it was apricot scrub and it had crushed apricot and be rubbing it over our skin like fucking cement.
Oh my God, I remember them.
Oh yeah. I can even see the peach lids on the...
And come here.
St. Ives, apricot scrub. That was it.
I remember that. And do you remember the Biore blackhead liquor things?
It absolutely, like, now that was utter quackery. Like, they did nothing. Okay.
That's enough.
Just fantastic book. Really enjoyed, like, I think it just, both of us, it was like ticking boxes in terms of what we're interested in.
Yeah.
So really enjoyed the read of it. And I just, like, it wasn't like, I'm perfect and be like me. And it wasn't that. It was like real world, how to make the most of the skin you have. And so
in a realistic kind of way.
Yeah. So
in an achievable way, I suppose.
Yes. So yeah. Jennifer Rocks, aka the Skin Nerd.
Good luck with the book.
So our debut book this week is A Ghost in the Throat by Dira Negrifa. So it's an account of her being a mother, both as mother of sons, but also she's pregnant with a daughter. And this, we kind of find out what happens with that. But then also at the same time, she is researching the life of a female poet called Evelyn Dove. But really, this book is thematically, and I mean, the opening sentence just says it all. This is a female text. And I think that is at the heart. This is a book about the female experience, her own female experience, and then how obviously that connects to this woman, Evelyn, and a kind of a really sad love affair that she had with a soldier. You have to read this book. You have to read the sentences. Dirren's background is as a poet, and you can see that in the language. How did you find the book?
I thought it was brilliant. I loved it. When I started reading it, I didn't read the back, so because I just wanted to go into it not really knowing anything about it. And I didn't realise that it was autofiction.
Autofiction, yes.
Yeah, but as soon as I started reading it, I was like, she's definitely been through this, you know, you knew it was her story. Mm. Because her baby was in the NICU, which is the neonatal intensive care unit. And just the way she wrote about that, I was like, she has to have gone through this, because it's probably one of the most, I don't know, just the oddest experience of my life. And it's really hard to explain to anybody. And she just nailed it. When you read it, you're like, it brought me back to being there. It was probably good for me to read it and just think back to just how far I've come with the girls and how far me and Dara came. Like, it's a horrible time. And she really, I don't know, she just really got that across. I thought she's a brilliant writer. Really,
she's reclaiming that experience from... centuries of women just being deleted, you know. She's trying to find out about Evelyn, and it's dead end after dead end, and the letters that she has, like, it'll be to the two her brothers talking to each other in letters, and she might get a sentence about Evelyn and how her life turned out.
So just, I just thought when she was talking about her experience in the NICU and stuff, and just the theme of the book being women on the periphery, I suppose, of history, and just, well, and how women are treated, and just in every day, in everything. And I just think at the moment with this, the stuff that's going on in hospitals, that it just felt very kind of timely to me. I just think once again at the moment women have been pushed aside, like in maternity hospitals women are receiving news about miscarriages or and that kind of thing on their own. Their partners aren't allowed to be with them, and it's the same with women giving birth. Their partners can be with them for the immediate part before they give birth, and then they've been told to leave. And the same in the NICUs around the country, women are allowed in just, I think, once a day and stuff like that. And it's just the sidelining of women again that's happening because of COVID, yes. Mm. But your partner is in your bubble, is in your house. If he has COVID, you have COVID. I don't really understand why women are being treated so poorly. Anyway, that's
my, I think for you, it's compared to me, like, you have been in a very comparable situation as to where Dearen was in very recently. So I'd say the book for you has a resonance that can only mean more than, you know, kind of what I did.
Yeah.
There's a section, I'm suppose, moving on to another section of the book where she was trained to be a dentist at one point. And there's a certain section of the book where she discusses part of that is they have to dissect a cadaver. And which is incredibly visceral, and I suppose it's such a clash to the maternal mother milk breastfeeding, sort of cleaning up after the kids, this kind of, and then you have this sort of stark image of sort of mortality put in front of you as a reader. I actually, because later on in the book she talks about donating her, but she ultimately decides to donate her body to a university so that she will one day be that body on a table. I have a donor's card, but I don't know if I could
donate your whole body.
I think it's because the way she describes in the body, and because even later in the book she talks about her own body and its imperfections and its asymmetry and all this kind of stuff. And she was thinking, as vain as that sounds, the idea of somebody looking at my body that closely, even dead, horrifies me. Like the idea of everyone seeing, like, I could just talk about the stretch marks on my back.
Stretch marks on your back.
Or whatever. There's so many, like, I mean, Jesus. And she...
But ultimately, this is what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to think about your body. Because I follow Roz Purcell on social media. And she talks about her body all the time and how she abused it when she was in her early 20s and teens. And just, you should think about just how amazing your body is and how it's got you where you are and doing what you're doing every single day, and to think about it negatively, like those, to think about the stretch marks on your back as a positive, as they were there because you're 6 foot tall. If you weren't 6 foot tall, you could be 5'8" tall and not have your stretch marks on your back because you grew fast.
The only thing I have with that is, yes, that's true, and yet, like, but it's almost like that's like paints over something, and it's like, oh, that's very nice, but the weeds seem to push back through again pretty quickly of examining those kind of imperfections.
I noticed, like, from the Irish Book Awards, she's been nominated for best nonfiction book, but she's also been nominated for best published book, and I think that's because of the way it's written, and it's like you were talking about, the she intersects the life of Evelyn Dove with her life and the mix of fact and fiction. And it's, I don't think I've read anything like it. Have you?
I think it's become there's that blurred line between kind of fiction and nonfiction that, you know, the personal essay has, especially in the States, has been quite popular over a few years. But this is kind of a fully formed novel in that way, I think, which is not a novel. And it's funny, even I use the word novel as I say that. And it was weird because when, I think, did you do the same as me when we looked at the Irish Book Awards list?
Yeah.
It was like, oh, it's a nonfiction. And of course it's a nonfiction. It's a sort of an autobiography with a unique slant through the story of Evelyn Dove. Okay, Sarah, I will be honest with you, Sarah. I feel like I'm not doing justice to this book because it's such a, I feel this is the kind of book that people will study one day. I feel it's a book that could end up on a syllabus. You know, I feel it's layered. I think there's so much symbolism in it. Actually, I figured out like symbolism that's come up, which is very kind of poetic. She is a poetry background.
Oh, yeah.
I thought the symbol of the bees repeated again and again, as I feel that's such a, it's a matriarchal system where, you know, queen bee. I thought the image of milk came up again, which is, I suppose is such a female text. The other thing I noticed, she used the term, the image of the jigsaw came up again, kind of the jigsaw of the body. She talks about the cadaver, the jigsaw of days, the kind of piecing together of days, and then literally giving her children a jigsaw. And I just thought, what she's actually doing with the Evelyn Dove book is putting a jigsaw together. I thought that was really, really beautiful. And as well, the body, the image of the cadaver keeps repeating as well. And I suppose it's that juxtaposition of newborn children, young children, and at the same time, the other end of life, kind of death.
It
really stays with the reader. And, you know, I'm not going to go too heavily into it, but there's a book which I did in college called The Powers of Horror by Julia Kristeva. And she talks about, Julia Kristeva, she's a Hungarian philosopher, but she talks about all these things that are things like hair or urine or anything that we kind of go, oh, that's disgusting, or vomit, or, you know, feces or whatever.
Yeah.
And what she kind of says is we reject these things. And she said, actually, hair isn't going, you know, we kind of go, oh, because they're dirty. But actually, if you ingest a hair, it's not going to kill you.
Yeah.
And in fact, when the hair is attached to your head, it's not disgusting at all. It's just when it's not attached to your head, it's suddenly disgusting. But what she says is it's that. It's when something is you and then no longer you, then we have an issue with that. Psychologically, we can't deal with it. So it's crossing a boundary of selfhood, she said. And the reason being is anything that crosses a boundary of selfhood reminds us of death. And she said, obviously, the ultimate boundary of selfhood broke is a cadaver, you know, is a corpse. And that's why it's so disturbing to us. And actually reading this book, I thought, this is what she's doing all the time. She's disrupting our balance but with this challenge of being faced with mortality again and again, and especially faced with mortality so close to children. So really clever.
It's a really powerful book.
Really powerful and deserving the two book award nominations, I think. I really hope she gets one of them.
That we're getting across is it's actually a really, it's an easy book to read. I don't mean an easy book to read, but it's not a difficult read.
You're right, because this was coming in the post. I knew I wanted to read it. I knew it was going to be a major book of the year. We wanted to do it on the podcast, but I did have an apprehension kind of going, Jesus, will this take me like, you know, where you read half a page at a time because you're quite exhausted from it, but not at all.
No,
not at all.
I really enjoyed it and I'd really recommend it. Thought it was very good. It's very cheap. And it describes the female experience. I've never kind of seen it written about. I've never read about it the way she's written about it. She's very raw and open.
I think that's what will stay with me is the ferocity and the rawness and the what will stay with me is literally the language.
I loved that she said that she loved the mundaneness of motherhood, because I think a lot of women feel they have to want, like we spoke about before with Pandora Sykes' book about needing to have a career and a baby, and I love that she was okay with just the mundaneness of motherhood, and that she, that, you know, that it's okay to say that actually I'm happy at the moment just hoovering you know, that that's okay, because there's a time in your life when you're exhausted and you can't do everything you want to do, and to accept that. And I loved this book. It's definitely one of my books of the year. It's a really important book. I like that she's speaking about the female experience, and as I said, at the moment that's a really
so important. So Duren, I hope we did you justice. I really, really hope we did. I loved it. So
good luck with the book.
So Sarah, episode 4 finished.
No, I really enjoyed this. I know every week we pick books we like, but I really love those books.
They just were great books to have a chat about. Next week, we're going to be looking at That Old Country Music by Kevin Barry. And obviously, Kevin Barry has literally either been nominated or won every major award, I think, in the world. And finally, it's happening. We are reviewing The Meaning of Mariah Carey by none other than Mariah Carey. So that is finally happening. We've threatened it for so long, which is great. And then our final book will be the debut, which is Twilight Together by Ruth Medjber.
Jesus, the tissues ready.
It's a very cathartic book, I think, for anyone who's lived through the pandemic. And I suppose just to wrap up our week, as we always do. Firstly, we have our, can I just say, is there anything we particularly want to get off our chest?
I'll go. Okay. Like in the last year, I think an Aldi opened up near me. So I've been kind of doing my shopping in Aldi just because rather than doing a big shop, I just go up there just to get a few things every day kind of thing. So I've been getting like the Aldi butter. Yes. Or there's a Lidl nearby as well. So also Lidl butter. So I'm not just being on Aldi and Lidl. But last week I went to Dunn's and I got Kerrygold. And I honestly didn't think there was a difference. And then I made a slice of toast and I put the Kerrygold on it. I was like, what have I been doing? There's such a difference. Oh my God. It's worth like, it's £3.50 for the Kerrygold block. And I think it's like £1.50 for the Aldi one. But there is a difference. Have you ever noticed the difference?
I'm off butter at the moment. I actually am. I'm having like dry toast with my scrambled eggs in the morning. John and I are on a regime at the moment, a lockdown regime. So my new thing, instead of going in, like I'd always buy myself like a coffee or something in the morning from the garage around the corner and I buy myself a bar of chocolate. So instead of that, I'm buying myself a scratch card because there's no calories in a scratch card.
So you're becoming a gambling addict.
But I'm a thin gambling addict.
Hilarious.
So can I just say, with the nights coming in and John has had the fire on, do you know what I mad fancy last week was bangers and mash with good gravy. And honest to God, and then I had it with rice pudding then as my dessert.
I did.
It was like the best thing ever.
This was obviously before your diet thing, because I'm giving rice pudding to Nancy to fatten her up after her 2 weeks in hospital.
Oh no, you should see the little bowl I'm giving myself. It's literally like about 100 grams of it. So 100 milligrams, tiny. But it was our last night.
What sausages did you have?
Oh, wait, the vegetarian ones. Linda McCartney.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah. This is the most miserable bangers in mash.
But I know John wants the...
I don't even know Kerrygold in potatoes.
No. Oh, a little bit of Kerrygold, actually. Sorry. No, but like measured. Very, very much measured. But
that's the thing about the Kerrygold versus non-brand butter as well. When my brother was saying this, you put on way more of the non-brand because it's not buttery enough. Yeah. Whereas if you get Kerrygold, you can get away with a skim.
No, it would be like that about, like, it has to be Barry's tea. Like, you cannot get shop tea or shop... things you kind of can't really... The other thing as well is dishwasher capsules. Like,
yeah.
You need
and
to
same put with the
money
powder,
in. Yeah, you just kind of have to spend the money on it and get the good stuff. And finally, coffee and a quote.
Oh, coffee and a quote, yes.
So my quote is from Joan Rivers, who I just adore.
Love
Joan Rivers. And I've actually been watching In Bed with Joan. It's like the YouTube series she did before she died. Very good. She interviews comedians. It's really, really funny. But her quote is, "I don't exercise. If God wanted me to bend over, he would have put diamonds on the floor." That's my quote this week.
Mine is from Maeve Binchy, and it's about just taking a chance, I suppose. If you don't go to a dance, you can never be rejected, but you'll never get to dance either.
Love it.
Yeah.
Do you know, it's kind of, I always have the thing, it's definitely a no if you don't ask. You know, you'd be like, oh God, will I email someone and ask them, will they do me a favor? I'm like, well, it's a no if you don't ask. So
just do it.
And I suppose before we go, if you like the podcast, as always, you know, you can find us on our social media channels, which is Good Luck Podcast on Twitter and Good Luck with the Book @GoodLuckWithTheBook on Instagram and Facebook. And if you can, as we said before, if you are on Apple Podcasts or if you are on a podcast where you can like and review, we would really appreciate that too. And as always, whatever you're reading,
whatever you're writing,
good luck
with the book.